Parshas Tetzaveh, Be'ezus Hashem Yisborach, we'd like to look this evening not at what is written in the parasha, but actually what's missed out in the parasha. And that is, of course, the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's name does not appear in the entire Parshas Tetzaveh. And as the Rishonim point out, it's the only parasha in the Torah since the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu is mentioned that the name of Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned. And this, of course, needs explanation. So we will see, Be'ezus Hashem Yisborach, there are various reasons given. Altogether, I found five. Maybe there are more. But the first, I think, is the most famous. Because the Gemara in Makkos tells us that when a Talmud Chacham issues a klola, a curse, even if he makes that klola conditional, which would mean that it shouldn't necessarily take effect, it's contingent on whether the condition is fulfilled or not. Nonetheless, if a Talmud Chacham issues a klala, it will be fulfilled under all circumstances, whether or not the condition is fulfilled. This is a Gemara, where the Gemara learns it from Eli. So many Rishonim, the Rosh, Rabbeinu Bachai, the Baal HaTurim say that in Parashas Kisisa, Moshe Rabbeinu issued a curse. Who was the curse directed at? Himself. Because following the Egel, he said, he begged HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please forgive Klal Yisrael. And then he said, and if not, Mecheini na Mesifrecha, eradicate me, erase me from your Sefer. Now, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did forgive Klal Yisrael, Solachti Kidvorecha, which surely would therefore render the klala null and void, not negeir, irrelevant. But because it was Moshe Rabbeinu who issued it, so even though he made it conditional, the klala must take effect. And indeed, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is therefore indeed eradicated. Some point out, by the way, Mecheni no Misifrecha is the letters Mispar Chof. Mispar Chof, the number 20. Tetzaveh is the parasha number 20. So that's indeed where Moshe Rabbeinu's name becomes omitted. Now the truth is, even though, as mentioned, this appears in the Rosh and Rabbeinu Bachai, but I actually found it's Mufurish in the Zoya. It's a Zoya which is the source of this in Parshas Pinchas, and he says clearly that's why Moshe Rabbeinu's name does not appear in Parshas Tetzaveh. It's as a direct result of Moshe Rabbeinu's own klala when he said those words, Mecheni no Misifrecha. Let me share with you an incredible Chanukah Satorah. Who is the Chanukah Satorah? The Chanukah Satorah was Reb Herschel Mikrakow, the Rebbe of some of the greatest Achreinim, the Shach, the Bach. And he quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says, and this sounds difficult to understand, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah, there was some ink left in the quill after HaKadosh Baruch Hu had completed the Torah. What happened to that ink? So the Medrash says that somehow was mashpia on Moshe Rabbeinu, Karnei Hoid. That's not our subject. So the Chanukah Satorah is very troubled. What does that mean, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah and there was ink left over? How do we possibly understand that? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu miscalculate Chas V'Shalom? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't know how much ink was necessary to write the entire Torah. So the Chanukah Satorah in his great Ga'onus says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew exactly how much ink was supposed to be used for the Torah. But Moshe Rabbeinu requested that his name should be erased. So that's why there was spare ink. That was the ink that was supposed to be used for writing Moshe Rabbeinu's name in Parshas Tetzaveh. But following his request, or almost ultimatum, Mecheni no mi sifrucha, that's why there was leftover ink in the kulmus of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Ga'onus of the Chanukah Satir. So this, therefore, is our first explanation. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu's name erased? Because he himself requested it should be so. He himself said, Mecheni no mi sifrucha. The second approach is found also in the Bala Turim. Bala Turim says, Va'oid, I'd like to suggest another reason. And he says, Parshas Tetzaveh, as opposed to the preceding Parsha of Parshas Truma, deals with the halachas of Kohuna, Aaron HaKohen, Hadlokas HaMenorah, Bigdei Kohuna. Essentially, Moshe Rabbeinu was in fact destined to be the Kohen Gadol. What happened? Chazal tell us that when he had the discussion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to take Klal Yisrael out to Mitzrayim. And he refused. And there was a 7-day forwards and backwards discussion with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. So as a result of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away the Kohuna Gedola from Moshe Rabbeinu, and it shifted over to Aaron HaKohen. Which means, therefore, that Parshas Tetzaveh essentially really should have been Moshe Rabbeinu's Parsha. But it wasn't. Therefore, says the Bala Turim, that's why his name is not mentioned, Mipnei Agmas Nafshoi. It would cause him great distress, as it were to, as the expression goes in English, to rub salt in his wounds. Not only is this whole parasha now not being directed anymore to Moshe Rabbeinu, but to mention my name, as it were, by the by as well. Keep me out of it. So as kovod, as it were, for Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah chose not to mention his name in the parasha that essentially he should have featured most prominently. And this reminded me of a chiddush, a beautiful yesod, that the Miri Rosh Hashiva of Chaim Shmulevitz points out. Because the Torah tells us, following the whole showdown Moshe Rabbeinu with Korach, after it all finished, Emor el Elozar ben Aaron HaKohen, tell Elozar to gather up all the machtos, all those frying pans that were used against Moshe Rabbeinu, tell Elozar he may take them. And the question that's asked is, why Elozar? Why Elozar? Why not Aaron HaKohen? After all, Korach's taina was that he wanted to be a Kohen Gadol. He wanted to take the frying pan into the Beis HaMikdash and use it to imakdik Torah just like Aaron HaKohen. And he lost out. He was disproven. So let Aaron HaKohen, as it were, the winner takes all. Let Aaron HaKohen take the machtis. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz quotes a Me'iri in Brochus, and the Me'iri addresses this question. The Me'iri is commenting on the story that's mentioned in the Gemara. There was a machloikus between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabban Gamliel was in fact the Nasi at the time. Because he was considered to have been poigeya in the kavod of Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel was dismissed from his position. So now the position of Nasi is open and they're looking for an alternative candidate. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yeshua was not appointed. Why not? Says the Gemara, because he is the Baal HaMaisa. He is the Baal HaMaisa. So the Meiri explains that Rabban Gamliel was removed from his post precisely because of Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua was the one that he was poigeya in his covet. To now appoint Rabbi Yeshua in place of Rabban Gamliel, that would have brought about a lot of agmas nefesh. That's what the Gemara means. He's Baal HaMaisa. That would have been rubbing salt in the wounds of Rabban Gamliel. Bad enough that he has to be removed from his position. But to install in his place the very one who, as it were, ousted him from his position, that would have been too much. And the Meiri says, so too, that's why Aaron HaKohen could not take the frying pans of the 250 rebels against him, because he's the Baal HaMaisa. Just like Rabbi Yeshua cannot be pointed instead of Rabban Gamliel because he's the Baal HaMaisa, so too Aaron HaKohen is the Baal HaMaisa. He is the one involved in the very story. He cannot take the frying pans. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asks the obvious question. How can you compare the two? Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua were Kadeshei Elyon. Each one a Tana, Tana Eleikim. And undoubtedly, Rabban Gamliel had his Cheshbonos L'Shem Shamayim. He was considered to have made a mistake. So I understand, for sure, we have to be very makbid about his covet. He's a Tana. So you can't appoint Rabbi Yeshua in his place when Rabbi Yeshua is the Baal HaMaisa. But the 250 men who brought about their own downfall through their own rishus, why on earth are we concerned with the fact that Aaron HaKohen is the Baal HaMaisa? Who asked them to make trouble in the first place? And you see over here, says the Miri Rosh Hashiva, how careful a person has to be with the kavod of others. Whether he brought it upon himself, whether he was justified, unjustified, but at the end of the day, Aaron HaKohen was the Baal HaMaisa. And if he was the Baal HaMaisa, we don't want to, as it were, rub their noses in it by saying, not only did you lose out to Aaron HaKohen, but Aaron HaKohen is now going to take the machtos. That would be too much. Al Koponim, it's in similar vein. That's what the Baal HaTurim is teaching us as well. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu on his very lofty level, but he brought this upon himself. He was removed from the post of Kohuna Gedolah by virtue of the fact that he argued with Rabbeinu Shalom. Nonetheless, says the Torah HaKadosha, even though on his very high madrega, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw fit to take away the Kohuna from him, but Chas V'Shalom to cause him any additional Agmas Nefesh. So in the parasha that now discusses Kohuna, and Big Day Kohuna, don't let Moshe Rabbeinu feature. Let him, as it were, keep a low profile in order to preserve the dignity and not to cause any unnecessary agmas nefesh to Moshe Rabbeinu. So this is now the second explanation as to why the name of Moshe Rabbeinu is omitted. I'd like to share with you a third explanation, which I must preface is extremely deep. It's almost Kabbalistic in nature, but it's a Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon, as only the Vilna Gaon could point out, makes the following phenomenal observation. How do you spell the word Moshe? Mem, Shin, He. Now, every letter of the alphabet, for example, Aleph. If we were to be asked, how do you spell Aleph? The answer would be Aleph, Lamed, Pei. That's the full spelling. We only write Aleph. That's the external, visible part. But then there's the Nistar, the hidden part. The hidden part of Aleph would be Lamed, Pei. What are the hidden letters of the word Moshe? So work it out. It's a very simple cheshbon. How do you write the letter Mem? Mem, Mem. So that second Mem is the pnimius of Moshe Rabbeinu. Next letter, Shin. Shin, Yud, Nun. So it's the Yud and the Nun. Hey is Hey Aleph, so it's the Aleph. So even though you write Moshe, the Chetzoinius is Mem, Shin, Hey. What is the pnimius? It's the Mem, Yud. Mem is 40. Yud is 10, that's 50. Plus Nun, another 50 is 100. Plus Aleph, 101. The pnimius of Moshe Rabbeinu is 101. Says the Vilna Gaon, look in Parshas Tetzaveh, there are 101 psukim. Says the Vilna Gaon, just Poshut Nifla B'Yosa, in order to teach us that even though Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, that means only his chitzonius is not here. When Moshe Rabbeinu passes away, his chitzonius is not here. What is the pnimius of Moshe Rabbeinu? The Torah HaKdoshah that he bequeathed to Klal Yisrael, that remains. So even though the letters, the actual word Moshe does not feature, but 101 psukim represents the pnimius of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that remains forever. The Vilna Gaon does not, however, explain why is this pertinent to Parshas Tetzaveh specifically. What is it about Parshas Tetzaveh that makes this the place to make mention of this Yesod? So I saw in the Emes LeYaakov, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Now we've quoted Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on many occasions. I don't think I've ever seen a piece like this in Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. He's normally very al derech hapshat, but here it's mamish toiras hanista. He writes, the first word in this parasha is va'ato. Va'ato tetzaveh. Now, one doesn't need to know much about Jewish grammar to understand that the word va'ato is actually superfluous. Because if it says tetzaveh, tetzaveh means you must command. So what does va'ato tetzaveh mean? And you must command? It's tautologous. You don't need that va'ato. So clearly, va'ato is here for emphasis. Va'ato, says Rabbi Yaakov, must mean, and you, there's something very specific about you, as opposed to everybody else. So I'd like to quote the words of Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov says, in the previous parasha, in Parashas Truma, Klal Yisrael bring all the raw physical materials with which the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, was built. The Zav, the Kesef, the Nechoshes. That is the real Chomer of the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu's Tafkid is, as it were, to breathe spiritual life into that Mishkan. To give the Chomer a Tzura. To give it Pnimius. The Mishkan was by no means merely a physical construction. Chas v'sholom. Va'osuli mikdash v'shochanti b'seichem. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, va'ato tetzaveh. Do you know what this means? Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh, but his pnimius is. And he quotes the Vilna Gaon that we just mentioned, that magic number 101. Va'ato, says Rav Yaakov in his great Gaonus, you have a very specific role in the Binyan HaMishkan. And what is that? The Pnimius of the Mishkan, not the Chitzonius. And that's why in Parshas Tetzaveh, because it follows on from Parshas Truma. Following Parashas Truma, which is all about bringing the raw materials, which is the Chaimah, the Chetzonius of the Mishkan, but Va'ato, you Moshe Rabbeinu, will not now feature in a physical Chetzonius way, but only in an Oifan Pnimi, that 101, that's where you will feature, as it were, behind the scenes, the Pnimius of the Mishkan, Va'ato, that's your role. Dvarim Amukim v'nifloim b'yosef, but that's now our third explanation of why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is omitted from this parasha. Because as soon as we have brought all the raw materials, now it needs to be stressed that Va'ato, you Moshe Rabbeinu, your tafkid is not in the physical manifestation of the Mishkan, but rather in the pnimius thereof. It's Dvorim Nifloim, but if you would be allowed to add, maybe let me just point out that if you fast forward to Parshas Shmini, Rashi says there that they constructed the Mishkan, and what happened? Nothing happened. The Shekhinah did not descend. So Aaron HaKohen and Klal Yisrael were very disappointed. What happened? Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still angry with us for having sinned with the eagle. So when Rashi says there that Moshe Rabbeinu entered the Mishkan, he davened to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and the Shekhinah descended. Have a look there in Rashi, in Shmini, Parshas Perektes. According to the Vilna Gaon, maybe we understand that Rashi Bo'imek now. When the Shekhinah did not descend and they turned round to Moshe Rabbeinu disappointed and Moshe Rabbeinu davened, the reason is because that was his tafkid in the Mishkan, to bring the Shekhinah. It was Klal Yisrael's tafkid to bring the Zov and the Kesev and the Choshes, that's the Chitzonius. But when the Shekhinah does not arrive, that's the Pnimius of the Mishkan. That's Moshe Rabbeinu's tafkid. That's why they turned to Moshe Rabbeinu, not just because he happened to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. Because Va'ato, your role, is the Pnimius of the Mishkan. And if the Shekhinah has not descended into the Mishkan, that's Moshe Rabbeinu's responsibility. After all, why did Klal Yisrael not daven that the Shekhinah descend? If they were so disappointed, why didn't they daven? And the answer is, because that's not their role. Their role is the Chitzonius of the Mishkan, to bring the raw materials. But the Pnimius, the Dovonistar of the Mishkan, that's the Tafkid of Moshe Rabbeinu. He has to bring the Shekhinah, and that's why he doesn't. A fourth explanation as to why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is missed out from this parasha is also mentioned by the Vilna Gaon. He says, in almost every year, and by the way, this year is in fact an exception, Zayin Adar always falls out in Parshas Tetzaveh. It's very rare for it not to do so. As it happens, Zayin Adar was actually last Friday, Parshas Truma. That's extremely rare. In most years, Zayin Adar falls out in Parshas Tetzaveh. So the Vilna Gaon says that, as we well know, Zayin Adar was the day that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. That's why his name is not mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh. When his name, as it were, leaves us, that reminds us that Moshe Rabbeinu himself leaves us. And that's why it's Dafka in Parshas Tetzaveh. There is a fifth and final explanation. And when I say final, I'm sure there are many more, but these are what I found. a very important pshat in the Oznaim LaTorah. The Oznaim LaTorah was authored by Reb Zalman Sirotsky. And he says a very important yesod. As mentioned, Zayin Adar almost every year falls out in Parshas Tetzaveh. Zayin Adar is the day both on which Moshe Rabbeinu was born and Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. We know this, that was Haman's mistake. So Reb Zalman Sirotsky makes a very, very important observation. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest Navi. Moshe Rabbeinu is the transmitter of the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is in a league of his own. It's true. But our religion is not Moshe Rabbeinu based. It is not a celebration of Moshe Rabbeinu, as opposed, of course, to other religions. Other religions, whether it's Christianity or Islam, La'avdil, both of those religions are man-based, leader-based. It's a celebration, it entirely revolves about the life and times and birthdays and dates, etc., of those who are purported to have founded the religion. Therefore, their birthdays and their deaths become central in the calendar of that religion. Says Reb Zalman Sirotsky, and this is very profound, Dafke in Parshas Tetzaveh, which is in fact the very week where Zayin Adar features, the very day that Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday, his Yahrzeit, that's why his name is completely eradicated from Parshas Tetzaveh, to show us that he is not central in the religion of Yiddishkeit. And that's why he's missed out in this very parasha. The very parasha which essentially is the week where we should be commemorating or celebrating either the birthday or the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. No, we are different to all other religions. In fact, Zayin Adar has no halachic significance whatsoever. It's true, in some circles they don't say Tachnun, this is not mentioned in the halacha. If you look in the Mishnah Brura, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, there is no mention. Zayin Adar is not a day of halachic significance. And according to Reb Zalman Sirotsky, it's more than that. The Torah has deliberately watered down any significance of Zayin Adar so that we should understand our religion, Lahavdil, is different to all others. It's not about Moshe Rabbeinu. It's about HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'Teirasei. In fact, if you trace back to the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, it's the most anonymous pasuk in the whole Torah. You remember that pasuk in Parashat Shmos? Vayelech ish mibeis Levi vayikach es bas Levi. A very strange pasuk. A man went from the house of Levi and married a daughter of Levi. Why doesn't it say who the chosn was, who the kala was? Who was it in fact? This was Amram and Yecheved. And they had a child, Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's the big secret? Why is it written so anonymously? But maybe this is the point. Not to give centrality to the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, and as if to say that our whole religion is based upon Moshe Rabbeinu, it's all kept very vague. It's all kept very secretive. And in our parsha, it's so secretive that his name is omitted entirely. A very important yesod of Reb Zalman Sirotsky. So in summary, we have seen five completely different interpretations as to why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is omitted. The Rishonim tell us, and as we mentioned, it's based on a Zoya, Mecheni no mi sifrecha. His name is wiped out because Moshe Rabbeinu himself requested so. The second pshat of the Baal HaTurim, because Moshe Rabbeinu should have been the Kohen Gadol, it got taken away, so his name is not mentioned so as not to cause Agmas Nefesh. The third pshat, perhaps the most profound, the Vilna Goyen and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, his name is removed at least on a chitzonius level, but not on a pnimi level. The Kuf Aleph, the 101, that was Moshe Rabbeinu's tafkid in the Mishkan. The fourth pshat, the Vilna Goyen, because Zayin Ador invariably falls out in Pashas Tzitzaveh, and that's when Moshe Rabbeinu passes away, that's why he's not mentioned in this parasha. Fifth and finally, because, as Reb Zalman Sirotkin points out, this is the week, the birthday, the death day of Moshe Rabbeinu, so the Torah deliberately misses out his name in order to show us this very important lesson, that Yiddishkeit is not about Moshe Rabbeinu. He is, of course, the greatest of all, Lekom Novi Kemoshe, but he is not the basis upon which Yiddishkeit is based. The basis is HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Tirasei. So we see how rich this all is. Sometimes there is so much to be learned from a pasuk, or from a word, or from a letter in the Torah. But today, look how many limudim we have learned from that which is not written in the Torah. Dvorim nefloim b'yosa. Okay, I wish everybody a very good Shabbos.